maybe it was good he didn't know. And the other thing was his learning, that there are maybe certain kinds of projects which are not only about, you know, not only about
the piano art, playing.
The piano playing.
Mm,
but
one part.
That there are many different qualities.
Hello and welcome to episode number 83 of the podcast More Than Tones, Music Education and Society. In this episode, Axel Petri Preis and I discuss the concepts of music mediation, socially engaged arts practice, and artistic citizenship. Axel is a professor at the University of Music and Performing Arts Vienna, where he is the deputy head of the Department of Music Education Research and Practice, and the head of the curricular commission for a new master's program called Contemporary Arts Practice. He has been a practicing music mediator since 2007 and still enjoys developing community projects and innovative concert formats. In the field of research and as editor-in-chief, he initiated the International Journal of Music Mediation and co-edited the Handbuch Musikvermittlung, Handbook of Music Mediation. In our conversation, we focus on these questions. What knowledge and skills do music students of today need if they want to become socially engaged artists? In what ways can music mediation projects support the societal transformations that are needed today? What can ethical foundations for music mediation projects look like? So this episode is a smooth connection with the last one, in which the Swedish professor Maria Westphal was my guest.
Axel, it's so nice to have you here in our office in Lübeck. You traveled here from Vienna, so welcome, first of all.
Thank you for having me.
I thought, how could we start? And I'm interested, first of all, in your experiences as a music mediator. So you have been a practicing music mediator since 2007. And I think it would be interesting to hear from you what was a very interesting or exciting thing that happened, maybe even in your early years as a music mediator.
Yeah. Thank you. Great question. There were so many exciting moments, but one stuck to my head. I had a community dance project.
Yeah.
And that was in, I think, 2014. So 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I worked with young children between 10 and 14 years old, with and without disabilities. And we worked with contemporary piano music. I had a very great pianist playing the music, and the children working with choreographers on choreographies to this music. And we started with the children working from the CD, so we didn't have the pianist there from the beginning. And in the first rehearsal we had together with the pianist, there was one very strong moment where I also understood what is maybe at stake in those projects. I have to explain that there was one girl, one handicapped girl, who kind of started screaming when she was very excited. I mean, in a positive way excited, but then she really started screaming. And it
for
showed,
longer periods as well?
Yeah, also for longer periods.
Wow.
Really loud. It was a loud scream. In the first rehearsal with the pianist, he came to me and said, can we do something to calm this girl down? Because, of course, it was his first time doing this kind of work. He's an accomplished concert pianist, specialized in contemporary music. And I was very pleased and glad to have him for this project. And maybe we can talk about this later. For me, it's very important to connect high artistic quality to community engagement.
Yeah.
So for me, this goes really hand in hand and has to go hand in hand. And so I was very happy to have him. And
but it was disturbing to him.
It was disturbing, absolutely. Yeah. And I hadn't thought about this before. And so, yeah, he came to me and said, can we do something to calm this girl down? And I thought, well...
Let's think about it together. What are your ideas?
And we talked about it.
Yeah.
Mm. And during this conversation, he understood that, of course, it's not possible to calm her down or to, let's say, silence her. Mm. Of course, that's not possible. And the important thing, I think, that he came to understand is that this project wasn't only about his artistry and him playing excellently, really fabulously on the piano, those really great pieces he was playing, but that there were, you know, more than just one quality in this project. Of course, the artistic quality was one of the qualities, and a very important one, but there was also a social quality, and so on and so on. So my learning was that I hadn't thought about this, like including artists into community work who haven't done this before, that it's important to also like talk to them beforehand, tell them what they
what could happen,
what they might have to expect in this work.
And the other before thing, they signed the contract,
right?
Yeah,
maybe it was good he didn't know. And the other thing was his learning, that there are maybe certain kinds of projects which are not only about, you know, not only about
the piano playing.
The piano playing.
Mm, it's
but
one part.
That there are many different qualities.
You mentioned something that many people in our field mention, that the musical artistic quality is very important, and I agree. So what's your explanation for this belief?
Because I think what I do is some sort of socially engaged art, participatory art. So it has art in its name. And I think if we want to do art, then we have to have some sort of idea of artistic quality. And what I find especially important is also to say that artistic quality differs from project to project, and can be very different. And of course, is also, of course, there's also a big difference between talking about the artistic quality of, let's say, a concert by the Vienna Philharmonic, or a community dance project with an accomplished pianist, children with and without disabilities. However, what I find important is, if we are in community arts, in participatory arts, then I would like to aspire to the highest possible quality.
Yes.
Looking at what is there and what are the people who are involved in the project able to do. Mm-hmm. So the standard isn't the Vienna Philharmonic, but the standard is the resources, the knowledge, the abilities that the participants bring into the project. And I think it's a pleasure for everyone involved, for me as, let's say, a music mediator or facilitator, for professional musicians and also for non-professional musicians to do something well, you know?
Yes.
And I think that's important.
It's very satisfying.
I think so.
For everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So coming back to the professional piano player and the little girl, what happened then? I guess she stayed in the project. You didn't tell her you have to leave because the pianist cannot deal with you. So in what ways did you grow, and did you find a good solution for everybody?
I think so. And I'm very happy that the pianist agreed on doing this still. Because of course he could have said...
I'm out.
Right, I'm out, because it's about me playing the piano. Mm. But he kind of, I don't know, maybe he understood, I'm not sure, but at least he accepted or tolerated that it's not only about him and his music that he's
and that
playing.
Was his learning.
And that was, I think that was a big learning. And I really appreciate him being so open towards this sort of experience and learning. Because of course, for a professional musician who is trained to be excellent and who knows from traditional concerts that he is in the center, especially as a pianist.
You know, and the focus of attention, complete attention.
Absolutely. Everybody listens to you and your music. And so I really appreciate him still being part of the project. And for me, it was one of the most satisfying and also emotionally touching projects. I'm really still very fond of this project and like to think back. Because in the end, everything worked out really well. And still, also in the performance, we had kind of tricky moment when exactly this girl not only started to scream, but also refused to go off stage when she actually had to go off stage during the performance. You know,
so yeah.
She just stood there. And of course, you can't just drag her off the stage.
Yeah.
You're not going to do this. You know.
What did you do? Or what happened?
What happened was that the other students built relationships. So all the participants built relationships.
Yeah,
built
that's
trust,
what always happens.
And that's so important.
Yeah.
And so one of the girls, I talked to one of the girls behind the stage and said, do you have the feeling you can, like,
go and get her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was possible. And it was only possible because they had a relationship. So it wasn't, I mean, really wasn't about dragging her off the stage, but to kind of softly and in a very sensitive way,
yeah,
trying to get the performance, you know, to
going
right,
yeah, or
yeah,
getting to the next stage of
right,
the performance,
right.
And I'm guessing that the people in the audience, they didn't have a clue. That's what's great about this.
Absolutely.
Maybe there was a very emotional moment, only
yeah,
one girl standing in the middle of the stage and another girl coming back,
yeah,
and taking her hand,
right.
I see it
right
in front of my eyes, and
that's how it was.
Yeah That's that's beautiful.
Mm.
You already mentioned that professional artists, and there are many professional artists here as well in our institution,
mm,
practicing the piano for 6 hours a day on their own in silence,
yeah,
that they need much more skills than what they often bring with them when they come to the university, even when they are studying. I think this is still an area where we have to develop a lot.
Right.
And I know that you've designed this master's program in Vienna called Contemporary Arts Practice.
Mm.
And while designing this program, you thought about these questions a lot, like what skills and what knowledge do artists need,
mm,
if we want them to go out into society and work with everyone?
Yeah.
So can you maybe, yeah, share some of your thoughts from this planning, mm, process?
Sure. So you mentioned my talk that I'm going to give later on,
mm,
about artistic citizenship. And this is also a term, artistic citizens or citizen artists, that we use in our curriculum.
Yeah.
So this is something we would like to aspire for with our students in this curriculum. And again, it's, I think, about bringing together artistic excellence and
human excellence,
human excellence, societal engagement,
yeah,
mm, and really not thinking about this in a as a dichotomy,
yeah,
as something that is opposed against each other, but as something that is mutually beneficial,
yeah,
also that can enrich each other. This is one really very, very important point in our master's program. And so we have three main pillars, which are improvisation, interdisciplinarity, and community engagement. So everything we do in this program is somehow connected to one or all three of those pillars. And the other special thing is that we have four study profiles. One is music mediation and community music. One is elementary music making.
Mm-hmm.
One is transmedial arts, and one is improviser, composer, performer.
Mm-hmm.
So we have students with very, very different artistic backgrounds, from the classically trained violinist to a DJ who was socialized in the techno scene, yeah. I'd say.
Also, so a techno performer,
right,
I would say.
Right. And also we do not require them to have an artistic bachelor's degree. So they have to bring like artistic skills, high artistic skills. This is something
that
we test, right?
Yeah.
So we have this entrance exams where we can test how high their artistic skills are. But it is not required for them to have an artistic bachelor's degree. So, for example, one of our students has a bachelor's degree in political sciences. So he brings a very certain, that's great. I mean, he brings a very certain mindset into this and a very certain knowledge into the program. I mean, I really have to say it's an enormous pleasure to work with those students.
I can imagine. I would like to meet them.
You should.
So how many are there in this master's program right now?
We have 16 students.
Those are different years?
No, that's one cohort.
Yeah.
Consists of 16 students, four for each study profile. And the special thing is that we have special designed courses for each of the profile. So for some courses, they're really within their own profile, just the four people in their own profile. But then we also have many courses that are for all the students or for a bigger part of the students. So there's a lot of exchange between the students. And this is something that the students also tell us is so very valuable, because they really feel like a community of practice. They learn from and with each other. They benefit from their different backgrounds, people coming from popular music, people coming from experimental improvisation and so on. So they're really very diverse in terms of artistic backgrounds.
And all of them see the positive sides of that, because I can imagine that some would maybe be a bit frightened to see that somebody else can do some very different things than myself. This is what I sometimes see in students.
And no, I really have to say no. And I think one important reason is that we, the teaching team, really were able to establish a very certain culture of teaching and learning. A very open, very much on eye level. This is also something that we get from the students through feedback. And some of the students come from very traditional performance
studies.
Right.
Yeah.
And they tell us that it's really very different from coming from a very hierarchical system with this master's apprentice system, coming to this program where they really have the feeling that students and teachers work on eye level. We do artistic projects together. And as I said, it's such a pleasure working with those students because they bring so much with them already. I mean, I really have to say I also learn from them, of course. So we learn from each other.
Yeah.
And everyone brings in his or her expertise. And this, of course, applies to every program. Still, I think what we managed to do is to really establish this very... I really think it's a very certain culture of or very certain understanding of teaching and learning.
And university life, or living together in a university and then going out together. That was another question that came up when they go out for projects. Do you tell them, find somebody who's different to you so that there's also diversity in the teams? Or is that open to them? Can they pick like friends and people they like?
I think it's both.
Yeah.
And I also think that sometimes it can be also assuring to kind of have people who are like-minded.
Yeah.
I think, as you've said before,
easier.
Right. Sometimes it can also be intimidating working with people who are very different, even though...
That was the word I was looking for. Yes. Yeah.
Even though there is a very trustful atmosphere, but still. So I think a good balance is great. Sometimes if you want to try something out, it's good to first have like a group of like-minded people around you, maybe with similar skills, to then kind of have the transfer into a very diverse group.
Yeah. It's like the next step.
Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you feel confident to take this as the first step, to really start with a very diverse group. Of course, we encourage people in this master's program because this is at the heart. If we talk about community engagement, of course, it's at the heart. Diversity is at the heart of this program, of course. And I think it's...
Do you still use the term inclusion? That would be interesting to know.
We do. However, at the University of Music and Performing Arts, we usually use diversity because inclusion we usually use in a more narrow sense, in the sense of including people with disabilities. So this is how we use inclusion usually at the MDV. And diversity then is the bigger idea, the bigger concept.
And a term that's used much more often nowadays.
Right, also can be critically viewed and is viewed critically. But
and still challenging.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. So you've talked about an openness and working on equal terms with people, that these are skills that are important to you in this master's program. What other skills or what other knowledge is important?
Yeah. One thing, of course, is artistic skills. And the special thing about artistic teaching in our program is that there's no one-to-one tuition.
Yeah.
Still, artistic skills are very important for us. So what we have is group tuition. So we have an artistic main subject for all our students. They all together have one artistic main subject that is called Contemporary Arts Practice, and which is hosted by one of the study profiles each semester. So, for example, in the first semester, I think it was the elementary music profile that hosted this main subject. Then it was the music mediation and so on. So they all together have this group tuition in their main subject. However, then there's also smaller main subjects in each of the profiles. So this is an important thing to also progress in your artistic skills. Mm. But also in a kind of bigger notion. So not only like being very, being a virtuoso on your instrument, but like artistic skills, also including being very sensitive, playing with other people, like improvising
reacting
with other people, being responsive, reacting to other people and so on. Mm. Also in community contexts.
Yeah.
So this is a bigger notion of artistic skills or artistic excellence than usually applied.
Yeah.
And one other very important thing are reflective skills.
Yes.
So we have a quite big module of 24 ECTS with research and reflective skills. So what we think is very important is that our students reflect about their position in society, about their position in the arts industry, about exclusion and inclusion mechanisms that apply to the arts industry, but also to society at large. And also what is their, or what might be their responsibility or their agency within this. And also reflecting on their own position, usually in conservatoires, coming from quite privileged families, backgrounds. And it's especially important if you work in community contexts, often with marginalized communities, to reflect your own position coming in a marginalized community, maybe in a very underprivileged situation, coming from a very privileged position, to not fall into paternalistic patterns of some sort.
Mm.
And this is something that is very, very important. And the other thing why I think reflection is also so important is also the history of especially German and Austrian music education. So if you think how the National Socialists kind of really took over music education that was there, like musische Erziehung, which relied on the cohesive potential of music, which is of course there, but without reflecting
the community building
aspect, which is there and which can be very, very valuable and which we also use, of course, in community music, community projects, but also knowing that this has dangers and this can be very, you know, dangerous, risky in terms of manipulating people, and especially if it comes under ideologically framed, you know, ideas. And I think especially now, I mean, I'm from Austria, so the right-wing party won the last election. And I think especially in times like these, and of course, this is not only the situation in Austria. I mean, if we look globally...
We will have elections soon.
Right. I mean, if you look to the US, to some other European countries, so there's different nationalisms, right-wing parties are increasing in strength. Especially then it's important to have this reflection on what are the benefits of making music together, but what are also the pitfalls, so to say. And this is important to reflect. To not be an, can you say, to not be an easy prey for the right radicals, you know?
Yeah, I was... Oh, you reminded me of my time in Weimar in East Germany, where I used to work for 4 years. And in the former socialist part of Germany, they used music as a tool too for their socialist agenda, so also for their ideology.
Absolutely.
And sometimes nowadays I'm also observing community music projects, and I love doing community music and for the reasons that you mentioned. But sometimes I'm also thinking we always have to be careful about ideologies and reflect, as you said, inner reflection, deep reflection about my own ideologies. So what are my goals and why these goals? Why would my goals be beneficiary to other people? Maybe they see it completely different.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a very complex topic, I guess.
Yes.
And now I would like to go to like the next part of our conversation, because you're also a book editor, and right now you're working on the book Turning Social, which you're editing with Annette Ziegmeier, my colleague here in Lübeck. This means for the last month, oh, that's a horrible word. For the last months, you've read many contributions for this book, Turning Social, which is about the transformative potential of music making with others, of music mediation projects. So you've read many interesting papers from colleagues from different countries talking about this aspect. And I'm interested in your learning in this process as an editor. So what was new for you, or what is new for you in this book, which will be published soon, I guess, in, in the
quite
fall?
Soon. Summer or fall of 2025. Yeah. Right, you mentioned Annette. It's so great to work with Annette. It's such a pleasure.
Same here. I'm happy to have her as my boss.
I can imagine.
There's
many great articles in this book, and it's based on a conference that took place in June 2023. But there are more articles in the book than we had presentations at the conference. We're touching on topics such as artistic citizenship, on decolonial practices, also on cultural democracy and other topics, topics that are really very important and even more important now. I mean, maybe more important than ever. So one thing, one topic that came up during the editing process was, and I kind of was aware of this, but maybe not at this extent. And this is in part kind of thinking about terminology. So we are using the term music mediation, which is not a very much established term in the English language. We have this term in other languages. We have it in French, médiation de la musique. We have it in German, Musikvermittlung. We have it in other languages. But what we are trying in this book is to really talk about this topic on an international level. So we decided to use the English term music mediation. Other than my previous book I did with Sara Schaka, I mean, we published it in English, but still remained very much in the German, Austrian, German-speaking tradition. And therefore, we used Musikvermittlung, the German term, and kind of introduced it or tried to introduce it to the English discourse. So this time we really decided to take the English term to really discuss the topic on an international level. And of course, if you use this term, you have to explain what you mean by that, because especially for people who are from the English discourse, they're familiar with, of course, community music and maybe education work from orchestras and other terms, socially engaged music making, and so on and so on. Not necessarily with music mediation. And of course, in our introduction, we really tried to explain what we mean by music mediation and also tried to show that there are many overlaps with related fields of practice, as, for example, community music. Still, I mean, this is a peer-reviewed book, and we had one peer review, and one peer reviewer, I think rightly so, telling us that we have to be more exact or have to better explain what we mean by music mediation. And also, the reviewer had the feeling that we run the risk of, you know, naming practices music mediation that formerly were community music, you know. Alter Wein in neuen Schläuchen, sagt man auf Deutsch.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if there's a similar saying in English.
Yeah, maybe. I bet there is, but I don't know.
Old wine in new hoses.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not what we intend to do. It's not the intention to have some sort of new umbrella term subsuming community music under music mediation. Wouldn't make
any
sense.
And it shouldn't be a fight or like in economic thinking, right, like in capitalist thinking.
Right.
Now we've got the new term, it's much better than yours. And it's not about that, right?
No.
It's about developing more understanding about what we do as a community.
Also to see where is the possibility of collaboration, where is the possibility to learn from each other, where is the possibility to join forces even. And this is what...
Yeah, so that music can have a bigger impact
Absolutely.
Than it has now. We
Absolutely.
Need more people for that, and not just small islands with people on them in the big ocean.
But still, you asked about the learning. So this was one learning that, depending on the perspective you come from, also from the disciplinary perspective you come from, of course, you understand concepts differently. And you also have some sort of images that pop up if you hear a concept. So for some people really socialized in the very grassroots community music scene, music mediation sounds kind of coming from this hegemonic classical music culture, being very paternalistic. And
but these are also prejudices, I guess. We have many prejudices, everyone. Looking at others and thinking,
Absolutely.
Oh, you're doing this, I'm observing this, and I know what you're doing and where you're doing it.
And of course, I have to say there are, and I will call it that, bad music mediation projects that have a paternalistic attitude. But this doesn't mean that this is music mediation, you know. And this does, of course, not mean that this is the kind of music mediation we stand for in this book, you know.
And that's why you've designed a master's program, so that there's many good projects.
It's the same in every field, I think. There's in every field there are better and worse projects, you know. And I think you shouldn't just take like one aspect for the whole field. And this is where I think reflection comes into play again. However, my wish really is that there's more conversation between people coming more from the music mediation side and people coming from more from the community music side. This is something that I've tried also in the last two conferences I organized at the MDV. One was during the pandemic, the other one in June 2023. So this is something that I really find so important, that we work together. So to not only see the differences and kind of try to distance ourselves from each other.
Yes.
But yes, to see differences, but to also see, François Julien says that in differences there is the fruitful in between. He calls it the fruitful in between. So the approach would be not to say there are differences, so we are different, totally different. There are differences, and there's something emerging from these differences if we work together. Mm. And this is, I think this is at the heart of community projects.
Yeah,
that
totally.
We are different, that we acknowledge the differences. We do not pretend as if everyone had the same backgrounds or possibilities even, but we acknowledge the differences and we work with the differences. As challenging as this may often be, but this, I think, lies at the heart of every community project. So I think if we are the proponents for those fields, we also have to kind of live this attitude also towards each other.
My experience as a music educator or music mediator has shown exactly the same. I was now remembering a project in Berlin, Sing Along Berlin, and I worked there for 3 summers and 2 summers with a very good musician from Syria, a very good dancer from Syria, and also another choir conductor who, with another focus than my own, because I'm more like the pop jazz person, and then a percussion player who was very into this master apprentice thing, who was not participatory at all, for example. And I would agree that it was challenging to work in this group, but I've learned so much, especially from the challenging moments when we had to find a solution.
Yeah.
Now I teach community music here, and I remember these moments and what I learned from others, and I can give it to people in Schleswig-Holstein right now. Mm. Yeah, and that's so important to work with people from other fields also, to see he's a dancer, what does he do, what does it do with the group dancing together? That was so touching and emotional for me, these experiences with community dance, and I hadn't had that before.
Yeah.
And I think we have to combine everything in the future.
And then also again, politically speaking, I think this is so important for our democracies also.
Mm.
I mean, we see democracies eroding.
Mm.
And so I think community projects are also a good possibility to practice democratic practices in how we work together, in how we negotiate certain things together. And this, I think, can have an impact also on society at large.
I agree, because the impact is in the individuals and they take it out into other contexts. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Because sometimes when I get like really depressed about what the world is like right now, I think we also have to convince politicians, because they're the ones in power. What would you say about that? Because it cannot only come maybe from our small music communities.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we have to work on different levels.
Yeah.
But the thing that I see now sometimes facing those really huge problems in terms of climate crisis, eroding democracies, polarization, and so on and so on. Sometimes I, and I also sense that for other people, have this feeling of powerlessness. I mean, me facing climate crisis, I mean, also, as you say, in small music projects, we're not going to end wars. We're not going to solve the climate catastrophe. We're not saving democracies. But I think the answer cannot be to say we can't do anything anyway, so let's not do it.
Mm.
But to have a more humble approach, not saying we're going to solve the problem, but we're going to contribute maybe a very small part to the solution of a problem. And this is something that we can do, I think. And if this is done not only by one individual, but by many individuals in many places in the world, then this can have an impact.
Our network.
Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. I still believe in it too.
Yeah.
It's just some days. Well, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about the situation now, it's hard sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I really like what Dave Kamlin says in his latest book about the civic imagination. He quotes a singer-songwriter, and there's a line in one of his texts saying, I can make a change in the world within my reach.
Yeah.
So not aiming for solving the big problems, which we're not able to and which we're probably feeling powerless to do, but really have this humble approach I was talking about.
Yeah.
Trying to change something within my reach, in my vicinity, mm-hmm. with the people I'm interacting with. And of course, and this is another, I think, so immensely important thing, coming out of our bubbles,
yeah.
and coming into contact with people from other bubbles, because this also particularization that is happening mm-hmm. in our society, with people being very, very much stuck in their information bubbles, in
yeah.
their opinion bubbles, is dangerous for democracies. And
yeah, yeah.
I think many people have made this experience, but these are very strong experiences for me, that if people from very different bubbles, with very different backgrounds, also with very different worldviews, maybe even political views, if they come together and talk to each other, many things can be solved, really, by talking to each other. You understand the other people much better. And this is one of the big potentials in community projects, I think, to bring people together who wouldn't normally meet or who wouldn't normally interact.
Yeah, and not just to talk, but to listen.
Right, right.
That's like the first ability we need. I'm just remembering another podcast, Hotel Matze, with Claudine Neuwirth. Have you heard of her? She's
no,
an artist and democracy activist here in Germany. Mm. And I think she also said some very important things about today and the state we're in, and
yeah.
With democracy eroding, as you said. And she said people have to have the feeling that their experience matters
mm.
and that they can voice their experience,
yeah.
that others listen and understand their emotions, that this is really hard for them to live
mm.
like this, and that this will help. So she says the same, like what you just said,
mm.
we need the small communities where we listen to each other,
yeah.
and this can help us to create a new society. And I think that in music mediation programs, projects, this happens, because we often focus the experience of the individuals in the group and we make something out of it.
Mm.
We transform it into art. So
yes.
I think that's what happens in many music mediation processes.
Yes, in the best case it does.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Mm.
I mean, it's totally interesting to hear that you're also talking about being listened to, being heard, being seen, because this is important, an important aspect of empowerment,
mm.
Creating visibility and so on. And then another question pops up, and I'm thinking of Gert Biesta now.
Yeah.
And he has this question, what if? So if you make voices heard, if you create visibility for opinions and so on, then he asks, but what if the voice you make heard is racism, for example, or is discriminative against someone else? So what I think what this tells us also is that there have to be some sort of ethical, how to say, maybe guidelines,
yeah.
ethical rules.
Mm.
I think rules is not the right word.
Yeah.
Maybe guidelines
sounds better.
that we negotiate as a group, that we can agree on as a group. And also I think that there are some like ethical or some values that are non-negotiable. So I'm thinking of
yeah.
respect or anti-discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
Those are guidelines that I find extremely important for community projects, and even more if you work with people from very, very different backgrounds. And as much as I think it is so important to bring people from different backgrounds together, this can also bear problems.
Yeah, bringing because they have different ideas of
right.
respect, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, if they have different political views, It can also be difficult. So this is why I think it's important to also have an ethical foundation and to think about those ethical problems that absolutely turn up during those or ethical questions that prop up during those projects.
Yeah, I've actually started at some point to copy this starting point in many community music projects that we ask the group, how do we want to talk to each other? How do we want to make music together? What's important for everybody to know about ourselves? And sometimes I have the feeling that my students get sick of it if I repeat it too often, and you've got the same students in different seminars. But I also try to do it in a humorous way. So yeah, that's also important, I think, that not everybody takes themselves and their own perspective too seriously. We haven't talked about that yet, but that's also important, I think, as a skill. Also for your master's program. We have to write it into our curricula and also into ours. No, I'm kidding. So maybe at the end, is there anything you would like to say to finish our podcast talk?
Yes. I think we started our conversation with you asking me about like the current state of how we educate musicians at or in higher music education. And I think there are good developments going on in terms of that there are more specialized programs such as this contemporary arts program. But there are also in other universities there are interesting programs. I think also in the performance studies there are more courses, sometimes modules, that deal with societal topics, with music mediation, with community music. So there are developments. Still, I think that we have to do more in higher music education, that there have to be really, really bigger transformations. Also, maybe some sort of paradigm change.
Do you have names for the old paradigm and the new paradigm? Hard question.
I mean, coming from this sole focus on art for art's sake, which is, and I really have to point that out, which can be valuable.
And a form of freedom, which
is
nice.
Absolutely. But there's this extreme focus, especially in the performance programs, on art for art's sake, to including this sort of societal responsibility, and also establishing a wider notion of what we understand about artistic excellence. So what I see is, and we have a lot of discussions going on in my university, and I know that from many other universities and conservatoires, that there are discussions about this concept of artistic excellence. And very often
have one tonight.
Oh, that's, and very often what many in higher music education think is artistic excellence is being a masterfully skilled instrumentalist or singer. So really playing the instrument or singing very, very, very well, which is important. And this is also what we talked about, having artistic qualities and thinking about artistic qualities. However, I think it's so important to say that this alone in the 21st century can't be what is artistic excellence. I think artistic excellence is really has to be thought of bigger. It also includes societal responsibility and skills we have now talked about, reflective skills, facilitating skills, social skills, communicative skills. So in a way, maybe the situation for musicians has become more complex and might also seem overwhelming at times.
I mean, you just have to go out and have your experience and then you learn from it. Like you also said in the beginning, your experience. And that's frightening and we need courage. When we meet people that are different to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think also for students, having the feeling it's not enough to just play very well the instrument. Now I have to do other things as well. But on the other hand, I think that this sort of community orientation, societal engagement, societal responsibility is so beneficial also for the artistic quality. And in my experience, all the students and musicians, and I think the pianist I was talking about in the beginning of our conversation is one good example. I think if musicians experience this quality, then they don't want to do without it.
Yeah.
And what I think is so important to also tell our students, we're not going to take away artistic excellence. No way.
It's not going to be deleted.
Right, right, absolutely not.
Mm, yeah.
But I like to think of it as a continuum, you know. And Helena Gaunt and colleagues in her, in their text, Musicians as Makers in Society, they say it's partnering values, and I like this expression, that community engagement and artistic excellence are partnering values. They're not competing priorities. It's not either or, but it's bringing them together. And also to position myself as a musician and reflective practitioner, sometimes maybe more on the art for art's sake side, playing kind of a traditional concert and really concentrating on playing the Beethoven sonata extremely well, and maybe in another context moving more towards a community engagement project and to really combine those things. And I think now, because I think it's also important for students to have role models
to copy good ideas from. Mm.
And to have the feeling that it is possible to combine this.
Mm.
And I think there are many musicians who embody this this attitude. I'm thinking of Yo-Yo Ma, for example, who also talks of himself as an artistic citizen.
Mm.
I'm thinking of Julian Pregadian. I'm thinking of Patricia Kopaczynskaya. I'm thinking of Stegreif Orchestra. So there are many, many artists who are extremely accomplished artists and combine their artistic excellence with this notion of societal responsibility. And I think this is what we have to strive for also in higher music education.
I agree, because it's much more exciting.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Axel, for this nice conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was episode number 83 of More Than Tones, Music Education and Society. Thank you again, dear Axel, for being my guest. We are looking forward to receiving your feedback. If you want to share your thoughts, please go to the blog Mehr als Töne with OE .podigy.io and leave them in the space for comments. The next episode will be in German again. If you're interested in the other English episodes of this podcast, scroll down to March and April 2021 or September and October 2020. So stay tuned, and in the meantime, enjoy making and listening to music and teaching.